the Archdiocese of New Zealand
of the Ecumenical Patriarchate presents
In the Narthex
with Father Paul Patitsis.
Join him as he shares with us the ancient apostolic faith of the Christian Greek Orthodox Church.
And now your host, Father Paul.
Edition of In the Narthex with Father Paul. Today I'm not with Presbytera Katarina in the studio, but we're going to be reading to you from a beautiful book published many years ago called Early Fathers from the Philokalia. And the Philokalia is a very important work of the spiritual tradition of the Church, and it covers many hundreds and hundreds of years of spiritual insight. And this particular volume was published in 1969. So this is a very, very beautiful book, translated directly from the Greek, with insights also from the Russian versions of the same. And we're going to be sharing with you for the next 2 to 3 weeks St. Maximus the Confessor, his first century on love and his four centuries, but we're going to start with the first century. The century just means that there's 100 little notes, and you'll hear them as we're reading them, 100 different little notes on love. And if you've thought you understood something about love before, I'm sure you did, but you might hear something new from St. Maximus the Confessor. He's writing in the 7th century. Continue now our reading of the first century in love with chapter 76. Now each chapter is just a few verses, really. Humility and suffering, bodily privation, free a man from all sin. For the one cuts off passions of the soul, and the other, passions of the body. The blessed David acted thus, as is clear from his prayer to God. Look upon mine afflictions and my trouble, and forgive all my sins. Psalm 24, verse 18. Through the commandments, the Lord makes passionless those who obey them, and through the divine teaching, he gives them the life knowledge. All teaching speaks either of God, or visible and invisible creatures, or of the providence and judgment manifested in them. Loving kindness cures the excitable part of the soul. Fasting withers lust. Prayer purifies the mind and prepares it for contemplation of what is. For the Lord gave us commandments corresponding to the powers of the soul. Learn of me, says the Lord, for I am meek and lowly in heart. Matthew chapter 11, verse 29. Meekness gives protection from the stirrings of the excitable part, and humility frees the mind from arrogance and vainglory. The fear of God is twofold. One is born of the threat of punishment, which gives rise successively to self-mastery, patience, hope in God, and passionlessness, from which comes love. The other is connected with love itself and produces reverence in the soul. Lest the daring of love lead to disrespect of God. Perfect love casts out the first fear from the soul, which has acquired it, and which no longer fears torment. And the second, as I have said, remains always connected with the soul. The following words of the scriptures apply to the first. By the fear of the Lord, everyone departs from evil. Proverbs 15, verse 27. And the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Proverbs 1, verse 7. To the second, apply the words, the fear of the Lord is pure, enduring forever and ever. Psalm 18, verse 9. And there is no want to them that fear him. Psalm 33, verse 9. Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, and so forth. Colossians chapter 3, verse 5. By earth, the apostle here designates the minding of the flesh. By fornication, sin committed by deed. By uncleanness, consent to it. By an inordinate affection, passionate thought. By evil concupiscence, simple acceptance of a concupiscent thought. By covetousness, the material of which passion is born and nurtured. All these as aspects of the minding of the flesh, the divine apostle enjoins us to mortify. Memory at first brings into the mind a simple thought, and if this lingers there, it arrives at stirring up passion. If you do not eliminate the passion, it bends the mind to consent to it. When this comes to pass, man is led to sin by action. Therefore, the wise apostle, writing to Christians converted from paganism, first ordains them to cease committing sin by action, and then proceed inversely to arrive at its cause. The cause which engenders and nurtures passion is, as was said above, covetousness, which, in my opinion, means here, surfeit, the mother and nourisher of fornication. For covetousness is evil in relation not only to possessions, but also to food, just as restraint is good in relation not only to food, but also to possessions. As a bird tied by the leg, when it starts to rise upward, is pulled back to earth by the string, so the mind which has not yet attained passionlessness, although rising to the knowledge of heavenly things, is pulled back to earth by the passions. When the mind is wholly freed from passions, it advances unchecked toward the contemplation of what is, directing its progress toward the knowledge of the Holy Trinity. When the mind is pure, then the apprehensions it receives of things incite it to their spiritual contemplation. When it becomes impure through laziness, the representations it forms of other things are simple. But when it perceives something to do with man, it transforms it into shameful and evil thoughts. If no worldly thought ever impinges upon your mind during prayer, know that you are not outside the realm of passionlessness. When the soul begins to feel itself in good health, then its dreams also become pure and serene. As the physical eye is attracted by the beauty of visible things, so is the pure mind by knowledge of the invisible. By invisible, I mean incorporeal. It is a great work not to be attached to things, but a much greater work to be without passion towards their images. For the war that evil spirits wage against us through thoughts is much harder than the war arising from the things themselves. He who has made progress in virtues and has become enriched by knowledge already sees things as they are in their nature, and always says and does everything in accordance with sound understanding, never deviating from it. for we are virtuous or sinful, or according to whether we use things sensibly or stupidly. The sign of perfect passionlessness is when, both in the waking state and in sleep, representation of things are always simple when they enter the heart. By fulfilling the commandments, the mind becomes stripped of passions. By spiritual contemplation of the visible, it is stripped of passionate representations of things. By knowledge of the invisible, it withdraws from contemplation of visible things. Finally, by knowledge of the Holy Trinity, it abandons even the knowledge of things invisible. As the sun, when arising and giving light to the world, shows both itself and the object it illumines, so the Son of Truth, shining in a pure mind, reveals both himself and the understanding of all that is and is to be through him. We know God not in his own essence, but through the magnificence of his creation and through his providence for creatures. We see in them, as in a mirror, his boundless goodness, wisdom, and power. A mind that is pure remains either in simple thoughts about human things or in natural contemplation of the visible, or in contemplation of the invisible, or in the light of the Holy Trinity. When it contemplates visible things, the mind investigates their natural properties, or what these properties signify, or else seeks their cause. When it exercises itself in the contemplation of things invisible, it seeks to know their natural properties, the cause of their existence. What follows from this, and God's providence and judgment concerning them. And now the 100th chapter. When the mind is in God, at first its ardent love seeks to understand his essence. But it finds comfort not in the knowledge of what is in him, for this is impossible and unattainable for all created beings alike, but in the knowledge of what invests him, such as eternity, infinity, indescribability, goodness, wisdom, and the power which creates all, maintains all, and judges all. Only one thing in him can be understood by all men, that he is limitless. And the very realization of his incomprehensibility is a knowledge which transcends the mind, as said men wise in theology, Saints Gregory and Dionysius. This concludes the reading of St. Maximus Confessor's First Century on Love. As we said at the beginning of our program, St. Maximus wrote in the 7th century, the late 7th century, and his words continue to inspire us. I hope that you've enjoyed this reading. We will read a second century on love next week, and we thank you for joining us. We're going to close now with just some music so that you can stay meditative as we conclude today's program. As always, this program is a ministry of the Sacred Archdiocese of New Zealand, which is headquartered in Wellington, whose arch shepherd is His Eminence Archbishop Miron. Thank you so much for listening.